as diplomats condemned the strike and stressed the need to uphold international law and protect media institutions in times of conflict.
Bombs and missiles cannot defeat the truth. The truth always prevails. What we witness here today is the undeniable truth of what happened.
The scenes we see here are evidence of Zionist atrocities against Iran, an effort to silence the truth. We are here to stand in solidarity with the Iranian people.
This is really unexpected for us to see the level of destruction. You know, we are told that this building was attacked repeatedly, total 11 times. But the first time when it was attacked, journalists were inside and they are running live programs. So this is totally unacceptable. Even in war field, journalists are protected.
Even in the harshest wars, journalists should never be targeted. This strike happened during a live broadcast. We strongly condemn this act of aggression.
Walking through ash-filled hallways and past burnt-out studios where just weeks ago millions tuned in for the news, anchor Sahar Emami gives a first-hand account of the June 15th attack.
I was in the studio from early morning, reporting on the Israeli attacks and updating our viewers. Around 6:30 p.m., while we were live on air, the strike happened. We knew it was dangerous, but my colleagues and I in the control room chose to stay, to report every last moment so the world could see the truth.
Cameras captured the chaos with the network's news host and director staying at their posts, determined to keep the broadcast alive until the building went dark. Their courage has become a symbol of Iranian media resistance.
We were live on national TV, fully aware of the risks. But we had a mission to inform. Even under threat, we did not leave. We stayed, determined to fulfill our duty as journalists.
The head of Iran's national broadcaster says the glass building will soon be rebuilt and resume its role as a hub for journalism, stressing that the destruction only reveals Israel's desperation and the true colors of its supporters. In the charred remains of this studio, what we witness is Iranian resilience that endures despite flagrant violations of the Geneva Conventions and a direct attack on the press. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
More devastation across the Gaza Strip as Israeli military presses ahead with its air and artillery attacks, killing and wounding more Palestinians. The Israeli warplanes carried out more than 100 airstrikes across Gaza in the past 24 hours. One of the attacks near an aid center northwest of Rafah killed at least two people and left many others wounded. In Khan Yunis, an Israeli drone strike on a tent housing the displaced people killed one and injured several Palestinians. Israeli forces also demolished several houses in the Saudi neighborhood west of Rafah. Palestinian medical sources say at least 12 Gazans have been killed since dawn on Monday. Since the start of the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war in October 2023, over 58,000 Palestinians have been killed and nearly 138,000 others wounded, most of them women and children. Let us now cross over to Gaza City and get an update from our correspondent Garda Ibrahim. Garda, over to you.
The Israeli genocide, as you mentioned, continues, and the massacres are relentless, as you mentioned before. Since the dawn until now, at least 25 Palestinians were killed in different airstrikes across the Gaza Strip. And the most brutal of these airstrikes targeted a group of people in As-Saftawi area that resulted in the killing of five of the same family, Subah family. Another airstrike targeted Al-Shaja'iya that resulted in the killing of three. Another airstrike also targeted Al-Nusayra refugee camp in the middle of An-Nusayra, the densely populated area that targeted a queue for water distribution and resulted in the killing of one and the injuries of many injuries around the people who were gathering to get the water from the aid distribution point. So the Israeli brutality has no limits, and it is relentlessly bounding the Gaza Strip. So This is happening amidst a very dire humanitarian situation and a very catastrophic situation that is resulted from the Israeli blockade that has been imposed on the Gaza Strip for more than 5 months in a row now, that deprives the people all the medical supplies and the aid, the food and the fuel as well. Three injuries succumbed to the wounds this morning and died as a result of the lack of medications and the lack of the medical supplies into the Gaza Strip, and that highlights the catastrophic situation the hospitals are struggling amidst, and the catastrophic situation of the hospitals in the Gaza Strip.
Right, thank you, Gada, for the update. I hope we'll have better news. But one quick question: can you tell me about the negotiations that have stalled on the peace and the ceasefire between Gaza, Hamas, and Israel?
Talking about the negotiations, the Israeli occupation until now keeps like hindering the negotiations by suggesting a humanitarian city in the city of Rafah near to the border, to the Egypt border crossing, and that actually is a very critical point, and that could actually cause the negotiations to fall apart, because the Hamas is committed to end the war. However, the Israeli occupation is not committed to ending the war, and it is right. Actually committed to building a humanitarian city near the Egypt border crossing. This is actually Hamas previously showed flexibility in the towards the negotiations and showed flexibility in dealing with the negotiations. However, the Israeli occupation keeps hindering and keeps trying to put obstacles to prolong the war and to prolong the Israeli massacres in the Gaza Strip.
Right, thank you, Gada. So no more development on that. Gada Ibrahim, thank you for the update, joining us from Gaza City. Two UN agencies have raised a serious alarm about severe malnutrition threatening the lives of thousands of children in Gaza amid the ongoing Israeli blockade of the territory. The United Nations Children's Fund said over 5,800 children were diagnosed with malnutrition in June alone, more than 1,000 of whom suffered from severe acute malnutrition. It described the situation as a child survival emergency, urging rapid aid delivery to the people of Gaza. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees also warned of a sharp rise in malnutrition cases in Gaza, particularly among children and other vulnerable groups. UNRWA said it has recorded a significant surge in malnutrition cases since the tightening of the Israeli blockade in March. It called for global efforts to ensure the delivery of life-saving supplies and end the worsening humanitarian crisis. According to Palestinian health officials, malnutrition has claimed the lives of at least 67 children, while over 650,000 children under the age of 5 are at immediate risk of acute malnutrition. An Israeli plan to relocate Gaza's population to a closed zone near the Egyptian border has drawn sharp condemnations from both Palestinians and the international community. The plan was unveiled last Monday by Israel's Minister of Military Affairs. It envisions building a closed zone in southern Gaza during a potential 60-day ceasefire in the territory, which is currently under negotiation in Qatar. According to Israel, Gaza's entire population of over 2 million people will be eventually displaced to the so-called humanitarian city. In response, Hamas has rejected the plan, calling it a preparation for forcibly displacing Palestinians to Egypt or other countries. The Palestinian Authority also dismissed the plan, saying it has nothing to do with humanity. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees condemned the idea as a massive concentration camp for Palestinians. The plan is also under fire in Israel. On Friday, a group of 16 Israeli law scholars warned in a letter to the regime officials that the plan could amount to a war crime. Political analyst Jim Kavanagh joined us earlier to discuss the impact of Israel's relocation plan on the livelihood of Palestinians in Gaza. Here's what he had to say.
You are absolutely correct. This is a cruel, gratuitous cruelty. It's absurd that anybody would ever suggest it in 2025. Even as you say, Israeli scholars are against it. I saw former Prime Minister Ehud Olmert was saying, well, this could be ethnic cleansing. Well, you think so? That's exactly what it is. But this is the plan all along, to kill and expel the Palestinians from Gaza. Okay, this humanitarian city is a concentration camp. They are saying people who don't go into the city are fair game. They're going to be killed because they're going to be presumed terrorists, et cetera, if they're not in the city. Once they get in the city, they cannot leave except by, you know, leaving forever and with no permission to come back. And they're going to create a situation where it's going to be impossible for all those people to live anyway. They're going to have the same kind of nonsense they have with these food distribution networks, where you're not going to get any food. You're going to have to be running through gunfire to get it. And people are going to want to leave. It's what they're going to do. People want an end to being shot at, and they want an end to starving. They want an end to their doctors and sons and daughters and mothers and fathers being killed. And, you know, so they're going to offer them the cheese to go inside the trap, and they'll be in that trap. And frankly, they're going to do it.
The United States President Donald Trump has announced that Washington will send Patriot air defense systems to Ukraine, describing it as a business move.
But we basically are going to send them various pieces of very sophisticated military, and they're going to pay us 100% for them. And that's the way we want it. We're in for about $350 billion. Europe is in for $100 billion. That's a lot of money, $100. But they should be in actually for more than us. The European Union is paying for it. We're not paying anything for it. But we will send it. It'll be business for us, and we will send them Patriots.
Trump's comments come after he confirmed last week that his administration had decided to sell weapons to NATO allies in Europe, who will then supply them to Kiev. This is while the White House had earlier this month announced that it would pause some arms deliveries to Kiev. Meanwhile, Russian forces have intensified airstrikes on Ukrainian military industrial sites. The Russian military says it has targeted key Ukrainian defense facilities, destructing two Patriot missile launchers and a radar station. As the Russia-Ukraine war enters its fourth year, U.S.-led negotiations have so far yielded no results to end the fighting. And that's it from me today. Goodbye from me, Bahman Ray. Until next time.
AIB English Radio in the month of Muharram presents. Today's special. Every day for 15 minutes.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salam, dear brother. Salam, dear sister. Thank you very much for joining us. This is today's special from IRIB English Radio. In this episode, we're going to speak about the role of women in Karbala.
Ya Umm al-Masa'ib, ya
Zainab, eloquent, vibrant Zainab. Zainab, Zainab, brave, defiant Zainab. Zainab, Zainab, silent, tyrant Zainab.
Today is Monday, 18th of Muharram, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 23rd of Tir, 1404 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 14th of July, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. This is Chapter Al-Fajr, verses 6 to 14.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. ألم تر كيف فعل ربك بعاد؟
Have you not considered how your Lord dealt with Ad?
إرم ذات العماد.
With Iram, who had lofty pillars.
التي لم يخلق مثلها في البلاد.
The likes of whom had never been created in the land.
وثمود الذين جابوا الصخر بالواد.
And with Thamud, who carved out the rocks in the valley.
وفرعون ذي الأوتاد.
And with Pharaoh, owner of the stakes.
الذين طغوا في البلاد.
All of whom oppressed within the lands.
فأكثروا فيها الفساد.
And increased therein the corruption.
فصب عليهم ربك سوط عذاب.
So your Lord poured upon them a scourge of punishment.
إن ربك لبالمرصاد.
Indeed, your Lord is in observation.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The Thamud were among the most ancient of people and whose prophet and warner was Saleh. They lived in a land between Medina and the Damascus named Wadi al-Qura, and had an advanced civilized life with comfortable houses and lofty buildings. Some have said that Thamud was the name of the father of the tribe, and so they took their name from him. Some have said that the Thamud were the first people who carved the rocks and produced firm houses inside the mountains for themselves to live in. Thank you for listening to this episode of today's special, where we're speaking about the role of women in Karbala. After the martyrdom of Imam al-Hussein at Karbala and his male companions, all the women and children were arrested and taken to Damascus in Syria on camelback via Kufa. During the journey, the women were deliberately kept tired and hungry and were mistreated. This was on top of the grief they were all suffering as a result of the martyrdoms of their male relatives. Yazid's aim was to publicly humiliate and ridicule them to the point where Imam Hussein's followers lost all public support. However, Lady Zainab, a brave woman, addressed Muslims everywhere along the way, exposing Yazid and his evil actions, his un-Islamic acts, and telling the Muslim world about the atrocities that were committed in Karbala. Lady Zainab and the Imam's entire family were kept in prison in Damascus in Syria. They were brought to Yazid's court, and Lady Zainab gave a famous speech in which she rejected Yazid's claims of being the caliph or leader of the Muslims at the time and thoroughly exposed him for what he really was. Sheikh Azhar Nasser.
Another thing that we see, especially with the women, and the head of the women was none other than Sayyida Zainab, salawatullahi alayha. One of the primary responsibilities of Sayyida Zainab after the martyrdom of Imam al-Hussein was to look after the heartbroken women and the traumatized children. You know what's amazing about Sayyida Zainab? She is the one who experienced the greatest musibah on that day. She's the younger sister of Imam al-Hussein. She lost more than anybody. She had the strength to process her own trauma and to be the shoulder that others cry on at the same time. To grieve and to be a source of strength at the same time. No man could do what Sayyida Zainab did. Women are better at that. There are some things that women are better at. Women are natural healers. They are. They have the ability to make calamities more bearable. It's that magical feminine touch that the secular world wants to crush.
On the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his family and companions, be with today's special. Every day from IRIB English Radio. People rise up and mourn. It is Ashura. See the struggle of Hussein in the Kabbalah. In one of the greatest tragedy in humans' history, we focused on the role of Lady Zainab as an icon and a role model for all of us. Zainab al-Kubra was once confronted by a motley and unreliable faction, yet she faced them with great courage. This is why she is an exemplary woman in history. Such a woman cannot be considered weak. Her faithful and feminine nature revealed itself in the most difficult of situations. She is a role model for all great men and women around the globe. Zainab, peace be upon her, presented a deep analysis of the problems facing the revolution.
led by Muhammad, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, Imam Ali, especially his family and Imam Ali, peace be upon them all. She said, "You could not distinguish between right and wrong in the sedition. You were unable to fulfill your duty. As a result, they severed the head of the Holy Prophet's grandson and put it on a spear." We can now understand the greatness of her character when we consider such things. Every year, Muslims around the world, in different ceremonies and gatherings, commemorate the martyrdom anniversary of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. So what's the importance of these gatherings? The following excerpt from the last will of the late Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, that is most touching and relevant. He said the memory of this great epic event, Ashura, must be kept alive. Remember, the cries of damnation and all curses that are rightfully raised against the cruelty of Bani Umayyah caliphs towards the holy imams are reflected in heroic protests against cruel despots by the nations through the centuries. It is the perpetuation of such protests that shatter oppression and cruelty. It is necessary that the crimes of the tyrants in each age and era be indicated in the cries of lamentation and in the recital of elegies held for the holy imams. Wherever the Shia have gone, they have taken with them the cultural forms of Azai Hussein as practiced in their country of origin. Today, Azai Hussein or commemoration gathering for Imam al-Hussein in one form or another can be seen throughout the world.
Imam Zainul Abidin, salawatullahi alayhi, Allahumma salli alayhi, Imam Zainul Abidin, he comments on the spiritual intelligence and the emotional intelligence of Sayyida Zainab, the deep ma'rifah of this woman. He says, "Oh my aunt, anti bihamdillahi alimatun ghayru mu'allama." Oh my aunt, with the praise of Allah, you are an untaught scholar. These are the women of Ahlul Bayt. Salama in Medina as well, the noble wife of the Prophet, she was given a vial containing the turba of Karbala. Rasulullah told her that this soil is from a land in Iraq in which my grandson Hussein will be martyred. It will happen in the future after I leave this world. On the day that you see this vial turn red, know that my beloved Hussein has been killed. She would look at it every day. Day after day after day. And when it became red, for the rest of her life, she was one of the leading figures in establishing the Aza of Imam al-Hussein in Medina. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
We ask you, dear brother and sister, to remember us in your prayer, the light moments with your Lord. Thank you very much, and may Allah accept all your good deeds and azadaris and mourning gatherings for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. Peace. peace be upon him. Thank you for listening to today's special, and fi amanillah.
مماتي ممات محمد وآل محمد بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من. این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
The ancient city of Hafshedan is a good place for archaeology enthusiasts to pay a visit. According to the findings of the excavations that have taken place in some of these old mountains, people have been living in this area for about 9,000 years. And so the city of Hafshedan is considered to be one of the first settlements of the New Stone Age.
The city of Hafshedan, also known as the city of industrialists, is in the southwest of Iran, 12 kilometers from the city of Shahrekor. Hafshedan is in the second largest valley of the province of Charmahal Bakhtiari at the foot of the beautiful Jahanbin mountain. According to the locals, the city of Hafshedan has an invaluable heritage left behind from lost civilizations, and to see these historical treasures, we're heading towards the Jahanbin mountain. Our Hafshedani friends told us that we had 2 hours worth of hard hiking ahead of us, so we decided to make a quick stop at a nearby spring and fill our bottles with its fresh and cool water. before heading out again. No pain, no gain, I suppose. Every single time we felt we'd had enough, the thought of what we were going to see once we arrived kept us moving until we finally reached the Ganavishte inscription. Unfortunately, because of the ever-changing climate, the scorching hot sun, and the freezing snow, the symbols are mostly gone. That we got to see an ancient relic before it was totally destroyed, we headed towards our next destination, a place said to be nature's playground, the Shahmanzar Mountain. On our way up to the Shahmanzar Mountain, we were promised that we'd be able to see some of the most amazing views Hafsherjan has to offer. And they were right. Nature is amazing and playful at times. If you look over there, next to each other, you'll be able to see two figures. One could be an elephant and one a buffalo. I'm sure that if you use your imagination and look all over this place, you'll be able to find many more. Let your imagination run wild. That's what we were told. If we had gone further up the mountain, we would have definitely seen more of nature's artistry. But you would have had to have the eye and the heart for it. Feel the force around you, so to say. And the last but not least location we'll pay a visit to is the Iskandari Hill in Hafsherjan. This is the first and largest national historical site in the province of Charmahol Bakhtiari. Based on the remnants of pottery that were discovered on this site and around it, it is estimated that it dates back to about 9,000 years ago and probably had a structural form similar to a ziggurat. This is the end of our journey, but there is still so much more to be seen. I guess we'll leave the rest to you. This is Gona Fanidi for Iran.
Why do most objects made from clay touch us so deeply? What's so special about them? Why is a jar, a plate, a pot, or even this little fish made from clay so evocative? Well, for starters, they're made from the essence of life, fire, earth, and water. You see, this is life itself, and I can feel her little heart beating.
A ceramic workshop belonging to a friend was probably the best place I could learn more about the art of ceramics. A two-story working studio that throws you into the land of pottery, where all you see is plates, platters, dishes, bowls, jars, and mugs made from clay. I call them artworks and handmade treasures. A Excavations show that the art of pottery dates back to the 7th and 8th millennium BC in Iran. As time went on and techniques improved, this art form reached new heights and masterpieces were created. The masterful brushstrokes of the Iranians on the ceramic works were the true narrators of the people's stories, their culture, customs, way of life, taste, talents, religious beliefs, and of course, their prayers. Azadeh wanted to draw more attention to the art of ceramics, and so she decided to bring various artists together to paint on a ceramic plate. In the exhibition, around 250 artists took part, each displaying their own unique ceramic plate. The event was warmly received by the people. It was very interesting to see how a simple ceramic plate could produce an endless possibility of designs and forms that reflected the emotions of its creator. Each plate was unique and amazing because as you stood there watching the brushstrokes, you could hear it whispering, telling you little secrets of the artist that brought it to life. Let me tell you something interesting. Each artist was given one and only one plate to paint on. Sounds challenging. Well, they all took up the challenge and created their own unique ceramic painting that told their own story. A challenging experience, but at the same time, intriguing. Working with clay, with the elements of life, must surely be enjoyable. And life's all about that. After all, as Omar Khayyam, Iran's prominent poet, puts it, "And strange to tell, among the earthen lot, some could articulate while others not. And suddenly, one more impatient cried, 'Who is the potter, pray, and who the pot?'" Hoda Lezgi for Iran.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his followers endured agonizing pain and suffering during Ashura, November 21st, 2012. The pain and suffering which Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his followers endured on the day of Ashura were too agonizing, and the harm which was inflicted was very serious. The life of Hussein ibn Ali alayhi salam is more valuable than everything in the world. The pure and sacred lives of those followers of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, the lives of those youth and those members of Imam Hussein's household are not comparable to the life of other people. Their bodies were covered in blood and dirt. They made sacrifices and they laid down their lives. The households of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam and Imam Ali alayhi salam were imprisoned. Those events are very tragic and very difficult to tolerate. But what was achieved on the day of Ashura was so great and glorious that it made it easy for Imam Hussein alayhi salam, his followers, and his household to endure the sufferings. This has been narrated by prominent figures. It is a glorious panorama in history which has been presented to the entire humanity. Imam Hussein alayhi salam prepared himself for such a day. Of course, the entire 50 plus year life of Hussein ibn Ali alayhi salam is a lesson. His childhood is a lesson. His youth is a lesson. His behavior during his imamate is a lesson. And his behavior after the martyrdom of Imam Hassan alayhi salam is a lesson. It was not the case that Imam Hussein's responsibility was confined to the last day. However, the event of Karbala enjoys such greatness and brightness that like a sun, it overshadows all the other lights. Imam Hussein's sacrifice prevented the deviation of Islam and the Prophet's path. November 21st, 2012. The Islamic Ummah should never forget the event of Ashura, which is a lesson and source of guidance for us. Definitely, Islam is alive because of the event of Ashura and the efforts of Hussein ibn Ali alayhi salam. And I am from Hussein. This narration means that Hussein alayhi salam continued the path of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, and he continued to promote Islam after him. If it had not been for the event of Ashura, and if these great sacrifices had not been made in the history of Islam, this valuable experience and this practical lesson would not have been bestowed on the Islamic Ummah. And Islam would have definitely deviated from its path, as many religions before Islam did, and nothing would have remained from it. The greatness of Ashura is because of this. Had it not been for Ashura, had this great sacrifice not been made in the history of Islam, had this lesson not been taught, and this experience not offered, Islam would have certainly suffered from deviation like the religions before Islam had suffered from, and nothing would have remained of the truth of Islam and its luminosity.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,710 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. On FM, 91.5 megahertz for Iran. You can also listen to the English channel of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. You can also listen to the radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our radio quality and other means.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's a pleasure to have you with us on Iran Radio here in the capital, Tehran. Here's what's just around the corner in the next hours. Our next segment offers a moment of reflection and wisdom. Join us for Hadith of the Day, hosted by Sheikh Muhammad Jafar Danish. This program presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them all, every day along with a brief explanation and commentary on the hadith. In this program, hadiths relating to a particular lunar calendar date or solar calendar date are presented. Then it's time to explore how to achieve a fulfilling life with A to Z of life. Sister Zainab James will present an Islamic-Iranian lifestyle making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran hadith as well as inspirational poetry, parables, and stories. Then it's time for the spotlight on the day's significant events. This daily program features a roundtable analysis and discussion of topical and controversial issues. Two expert guests provide insightful analysis. Don't miss it. Then it's time for Islamic Laws, hosted by Hujjatul Islam Sheikh Javed Akbari. This program focuses on Islamic jurisprudential rulings based on the fatwas of prominent scholars or maraji. Each episode addresses practical religious questions and explores common issues that arise in daily life. Next on deck, we have Hadith of the Day. Stay with us.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the Day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers, dear sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day, where timeless spiritual wisdom meets modern science. Today we reflect on a profound saying of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Indeed, our Shia, our followers, are those whose hearts are free from every form of deceit, hatred, and hypocrisy. Let me repeat it again. Indeed, our Shia are those whose hearts are free from every form of deceit, hatred, and hypocrisy. At first glance, this is a spiritual teaching about sincerity and purity of heart, but what if I told you that modern science supports the importance of such purity not just spiritually, but physically and mentally? Let's explore this together. Imam Hussein alayhi salam highlights three diseases of the heart: deceit, hatred, and hypocrisy. Science now confirms that these emotional states deeply affect our well-being. First, deceit. Psychologists tell us that dishonesty doesn't just harm others, it also harms ourselves. Studies have shown that lying activates stress centers in the brain. Chronic deceit causes anxiety, depression, and even impairs cognitive function. Living honestly reduces stress hormones like cortisol and promotes mental clarity. So Imam Hussein alayhi salam's call to sincerity is a call to mental health and peace. And second, hatred. Hatred and resentment have been linked to increased risk of heart disease, weakened immune systems, and higher blood pressure. Researchers at Stanford University found that holding grudges literally keeps the brain in a state of fight or flight, making it hard to relax or heal. By contrast, forgiveness and compassion improve psychological resilience and reduce inflammation in the body. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's teaching to cleanse our hearts from hatred is supported by science as a key to both emotional and physical health. And third is hypocrisy. Living a double life, pretending one thing but feeling another, creates emotional dissonance. Psychologists call this cognitive dissonance, which leads to chronic stress and lower self-esteem. People who